Thanks for waking up with WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us here on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Centers, our fabulous producer. Matt Cotrillo is watching things over in the newsroom, keeping us informed, so we appreciate that. We are rocking red for healthy hearts at WKOK and Evangelical Community Hospital. Are working hard to make sure that heart health is brought up, talked about, and treated if it's something that you need in your life. And for that, we have an encore performance today by Dr. John Pfeiffer. He's back. We met him last year, but ultra-informed. I'm going to call you a young doc, and he's an interventional cardiologist at the Heart and Vascular Center at Evangelical Community Hospital. And we always talk to you about heart failure. Sounds so bad when you put it that way, right?
Yeah, heart failure, it's a little bit of a scary term, but I always tell patients that, you know, we have lots of good treatments, and people with heart failure today can live normal lives. It can progress and become very serious, but allaying some of that fear early on, I think, is important.
All right, well, let's start at the beginning. Define heart failure. What goes wrong with the heart that it gets that particular congestive heart failure?
Yeah, the term congestive heart failure is a little bit of an older term. A lot of the time we just refer to it as heart failure now because not everyone has those congestive symptoms. And it can be sort of surprisingly tricky to pin down a good definition of what heart failure is. What I tell patients is that, heart failure happens when there's some problem with the heart such that it cannot meet the needs of the body. Now, there's sort of, one of the major divisions we make is whether or not there is a problem with the pumping function of the heart, the squeezing function. And that's present about half of the time. The other half of the time, the heart squeezes normally, but there's something else going on. And that something else could be a lot of different things, but most commonly it's either because the heart has become too stiff and requires higher pressures to work, or there's a problem with a valve. One of the heart valves is leaky or tight. And then there's sort of lots of different other causes that are a lot less common.
All right. So congestive heart failure might be a kind of a archaic term. What's the ideal term? What better describes?
I think heart failure, it's just the congestion sometimes throws people off a little bit because, typically we refer to pulmonary congestion where there would be fluid in the lungs and people would be very short of breath, they would have a cough, that kind of thing. But the body adapts to heart failure over time and the lungs can actually be clear. People don't necessarily have the congestive symptoms, but they can have lots of other things, fatigue and that kind of thing.
And what leads to it? Let's see, probably a lot of things.
Causes of heart failure. In the United States, the number one cause is still ischemic heart disease. And ischemic heart disease happens when there's blockages in the coronary arteries, which leads to heart attacks. When a heart attack happens, it depends on sort of the treatment for the heart attack, but there can be, permanent or long-lasting damage to the heart. If enough of the heart muscle is affected by a heart attack, then the squeezing function decreases, and at some point, people often will get symptoms.
All right. And I can prevent blockages, right?
Correct. So ischemic heart disease has a number of risk factors, some of which are modifiable. Smoking is probably the biggest modifiable risk factor. And although Americans smoke a lot less than they did, say, 40, 50 years ago, it's still an ongoing and pretty big problem. Other factors, hypertension. We have a lot of good treatments for blood pressure nowadays, cholesterol. There are some risk factors that are not modifiable. Well, at least not yet. Genetics being the biggest one. Family history of ischemic heart disease or coronary artery disease.
Now, if somebody was smoking, gives it up, and does vaping, does that contribute to heart disease?
I don't think we have enough evidence yet. There's some controversy in the medical world and the public health world about vaping. I think there's pretty widespread agreement at this point that children, teenagers, et cetera, should definitely not be vaping, and that's becoming more of a problem. I don't know that, I certainly would not say that vaping is risk-free. Whether or not it is a risk factor of the same magnitude of smoking, I don't think we know all the details yet.
All right. At the Heart and Vascular Center at Evangelical Community Hospital, at some point, a patient comes to you and you detect or they already know they have heart failure. What are the next steps?
So one of the things we want to do early on is try to establish the cause of it. An echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound study of the heart, will answer a lot of questions. In particular, it will tell us if there is a problem with the squeezing function of the heart. If there's not a problem with the squeezing function of the heart, we want to know about the valves. Is there a tight valve? Is there a leaky valve? That kind of thing. We also want to take a good history, talk to the patient about risk factors like smoking. We want to know about their family history. We want to know about things like hypertension, that kind of stuff, alcohol use. All of that plays a big role. Looking at the patient, we can sometimes get a clue as to what's going on. If we think that there's a problem with blockages in the heart in particular, we'll often do different studies, either a stress test or even a cardiac catheterization to look into that.
All right, and so those are some of the things that you do there. What is new in your field? What are you doing these days at the center that maybe you weren't doing even at this time last year when we met you?
Yeah. Well, I think that in medicine in general, and in particular in cardiology and heart failure, we're trying to move a lot of treatments, you know, out of the hospital and more into the home. You know, one of the issues we have with heart failure is that people do get fluid overloaded, so they can have problems either with fluid in the lungs where they're short of breath or fluid building up in the legs, the ankles, the abdomen. We treat that typically with diuretics, but sometimes, you know, an oral version of a diuretic is not effective. We have to give an IV. We're able to do that in the clinic at Evangelical. A lot of hospitals and or a lot of cardiology clinics have the ability to do that now. We're also trying to move it out into the community so that if, you know, someone calls the office and says, hey, you know, my weight's up 5 pounds, I feel like my diuretic's not working as well, we could have someone go out into the home. We haven't started doing that yet, but we're looking into it. The goal being that, you know, we keep people out of the hospital. No one wants to go to the hospital. No one wants to be in there for a week, you know, attached to an IV, getting an IV diuretic. So the more that we can move out of the hospital, I think the better off we'll be.
It's funny to hook you up to a fluid in order to prevent the fluid buildup, but I guess there's some irony there. What about new drugs? I guess, you know, the time is marching on in that field.
Yeah. There's always sort of new pharmaceuticals in the pipeline. A new drug that came out a few years ago, Entresto, has shown a lot of promise in terms of treating heart failure, especially the kind where there is a problem with the squeezing function of the heart. A lot of our treatments are designed for a problem with the squeezing function, but keep in mind that's only about half of patients with heart failure. People that have a problem with sort of stiffness in the heart, what we call diastolic heart failure, we don't have as many good treatments, but there's a lot of stuff that's being looked at. Other you know, treatments, if we know what the cause is, for example, if the cause is ischemic heart disease, if there is a blockage, we know that opening that blockage either with balloons and stents or with heart surgery, with bypass surgery, we can often see an improvement in the squeezing function of the heart, in that, you know, often will improve symptoms.
So somebody who ends up with a congestive heart failure diagnosis with maybe some medicine and maybe some surgery, maybe some rehab, there can be a sort of a cure. There'd be a pretty normal life afterward.
Yeah, there's a big spectrum in terms of how symptomatic people are with heart failure. And, you know, we have some markers. We measure something called an ejection fraction, which, you know, quantifies the squeezing function of the heart. And that gives us some idea about prognosis. But I always tell people that, you know, the numbers don't tell the whole story. Historically, if you look at the big studies we did, the Framingham Heart Study, that kind of thing, you would see, you know, a mortality rate upwards of 50% at 5 years after initial diagnosis. With treatment, those numbers have gotten better. You know, patients are always asking me, so, you know, what's my prognosis, that kind of thing. And I'm always hesitant. I never want to sort of, you know, nail down an exact timeline, because everyone is different, and we're just notoriously bad at sort of predicting those kind of things. I certainly have plenty of patients with heart failure that I say, look, I fully expect you to live a you know, normal life expectancy, in oftentimes with minimal symptoms. On the flip side, there are people who have much more advanced disease, and treatments for them are also advancing. For people with the very end stage of heart disease, heart transplant has often been the procedure of choice. That's always been limited by the availability of hearts, though, donor hearts. Over the last couple of decades, there's been a lot of interest in what we call mechanical circulatory support options, or ventricular assist devices. We've come a long way with them. I don't think we're you know, to the point where it's sort of a viable option for everyone, but I think that over the next 10 or 20 years, we're going to see more of that.
And pacemakers, they're advancing. That time is marching on, too.
Yeah, pacemakers have been around for a long time, and we've seen a lot of incremental improvement. We have pacemakers now that have an extra lead, which can actually improve the squeezing function of the heart. So a lot of time, patients with heart failure and certain other characteristics will recommend treatments like that.
All right, and I think I saw on Yahoo News that there's something you can swallow, and it goes through your body and goes into your circulatory system, and monitors, like a little electronic tracker. Maybe it doesn't go into your circulatory system. I guess that wouldn't be ideal.
I think we're going to see, you know, more of this coming down the line, the idea of tracking devices, that kind of thing, that may actually sit in the circulation to monitor stuff, give us an idea of volume status, fluid status, help us guide therapies.
All right. And my smartwatch can tell me my heart rate. Are smartwatches coming along to help you?
Oh, very much so. I'll have patients come in now and they'll say, yeah, you know, my atrial fibrillation's been acting up. I can see it on my watch, on my Fitbit, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I used to have to give them a monitor to wear at home. Now they're telling me.
Okay, so they have that. And that's all helpful information. Knowledge is power under those circumstances.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I want to prevent meeting you other than these annual visits.
Sure.
What do I do?
I think you don't smoke, right?
No. Nope.
Good. I think a healthy diet is important, regular exercise. Any risk factors you have that are modifiable, things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, just make sure that your physician's tracking those things. Those are the crux of it, though. Healthy diet, exercise, avoiding cigarettes.
All right, some of those main basic things. And some people just don't like to take good care of themselves. They might continue to smoke. Maybe they drink more than they should. Maybe they eat more than they should. For those individuals, that is the track that can lead to a meeting with you or Dr. Lynch or some of your other colleagues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a certain number of lifestyle choices that can lead to an increase in any number of things, ischemic heart disease as well as heart failure. And it can be challenging. We have an obesity epidemic in this country. Alcohol is still a problem. All of those things contribute.
All right. And do you ever yell at your patients?
I don't yell. Sometimes we have a stern talking. I've never found it to be that effective, though. In particular, smoking is a real challenge. People get beat up when they come to the hospital if they smoke. Everyone talks to them. I often see people after a heart attack that they smoke, and what I say to them is, look, I know everyone's going to talk to you about this. The one thing I'll tell you is, you had a heart attack here. If you keep smoking, you will have a second heart attack. I can't tell you when it's going to happen, but it's going to happen. And, that oftentimes I find will, make an impact with them. A lot of patients will take, adverse event like a heart attack as an opportunity to stop smoking.
All right. And you have some good 80-year-old patients that are hanging in there and following your good advice, and they're doing better these days.
Oh, absolutely. 80, 90, yeah, most definitely.
All right, fantastic. Anything else, anything you'd like to add? Maybe something I've never asked you that I should have last year or this year? What else is on your mind today?
Well, I think we've talked about most of the important stuff. I think there's a lot of exciting stuff in the pipeline. I think that we're sort of on the cusp of treatments for some of the non-modifiable risk factors, things like genetic disease. We're starting in medicine broadly to see some early treatments for genetic conditions. I don't think we understand completely all of the causes of heart failure or ischemic heart disease at the genetic level. I suspect over the next 20 years, we're going to know a lot more about that stuff. We're going to see treatments. There will be a day at some point in the future where, heart failure is something we talk, some problem that we used to have. This is obviously a ways mm-hmm. away, but I think there's a lot of exciting stuff in the pipeline.
Right. You can see that. That's in the pipeline. You're concerned with the pump and the pipelines. Heart specialist, interventional cardiologist, Dr. John Pfeiffer. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Pfeiffer's appear as part of our Rock Red for Healthy Hearts initiative and promotion and our Words with Evangelical Community Hospital. He comes from the Heart and Vascular Center at Evangelical Hospital. You can connect right to them at WKOK.com or evanhospital.com. And find out more about what they can do to help your heart at Evangelical Community Hospital.